Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
So, Ross Baker, we have this ideologically to the right group of non-compromising people in the House of Representatives who spend a great deal of time vilifying the president. We have a more conciliatory group, as you have written in your new book, Is Bipartisanship Dead?, about the U.S. Senate. And the two are both going to be controlled by the Republicans in the next Congress. What can we expect?
Well, you know, Alan, the lives and activities of House members and senators, I think, are more different than most people would imagine. House members represent, you know, congressional districts, parts of states. These are political units consisting of roughly 700,000 people. Senators represent entire states, and although, you know, in the simple scheme of modern politics, we designate states as red states and blue states. Well, you know, that's an oversimplification. In every state, however red, there are blue areas, and in blue states, there are pockets of red. Senators know that, and no senator wants to alienate any segment of his constituency. I would contrast that with House districts, some of which are deeply red. They are red not only because Americans sort themselves out by income and race and politics, by the way, but also by the fact of gerrymandering, which, of course, is the state legislatures drawing the legislative maps that delineate the congressional districts.
We saw it happen in Texas, where they wiped out all the Democrats most of the Democrats in one fell swoop.
That's right. And, you know, there's also a paradox in the fact that the Voting Rights Act of 1965 opened the door for these so-called minority-influenced districts. And this has allowed Republican legislatures, principally in the South, to pack huge numbers of African-American voters into a single district that do guarantee the election of an African-American representative. But they supply these districts with an overabundance of Democratic votes. So you have these African-American representatives winning with 90% of the vote, whereas if African-American voters were distributed more evenly, Democrats might be competitive in more districts.
So let me ask you a question about that, because I find it so interesting that there will be people like us, political scientists, who say, wait a second now, this is a strategy in a state where you have, you know, some black voters, the idea is to shove them all into one place so that you can minimize the fact that they can't win in two districts.
Right. Yeah, this is a practice known as packing, which is you put as many of, if you're, let's say, a Republican legislature in Alabama, and you're looking at your populations, and you know that the Voting Rights Act is going to require that Alabama have at least one African American representative. So what you do is you draw a district that pulls in as many African American voters who are overwhelmingly Democratic as possible, rather than distributing them more evenly, which would allow Democrats to be competitive in more districts. So what you do is you honor the letter of the Voting Rights Act, but not its spirit.
Exactly. So Hillary Clinton runs in 2016. What is the chance that she brings a Democratic Congress back with her?
Well, I think if the pattern set by Barack Obama, continues into 2016, chances are that women would be mobilized. She would probably get a fair amount of support from African Americans, and she probably would have coattails that would bring in some Democratic senators and some Democratic representatives. Whether it would be enough, it might be enough to turn the Senate around and give the Democrats back the majority they lost in November's election, but probably not the House. That the Republican majority in the House is now so large, it goes back actually to the 80th Congress, and we're going into the 114th Congress now, The 80th Congress was the one that was elected in 1946. So that's an almost unprecedented margin of control that the Republicans have.
And yet they lost it again. I mean, it wasn't that it was never going to turn around.
They did lose it again. They did lose it again. And, you know, it is possible that, and a lot of it, Alan, is going to depend on who the Republicans put up.
And who do you think they're going to put up now that you've raised the subject?
Well, you know, there are certain people that I think are pretty well positioned. My own feeling is somebody like Scott Walker, the recently reelected governor from Wisconsin. It's a nominally Democratic state. It's Democratic in the sense that it goes Democratic in presidential elections. But it has a fair number of Republicans in its congressional delegation. And so, you know, I think it's a good state to be from. I think that the Republicans will probably avoid choosing someone as markedly conservative as Ted Cruz, or in a way as sort of unpredictable as Rand Paul.
Sure.
You know, someone like Marco Rubio might be a good choice. He's from Florida. It's an important state. But Rubio has, you know, really burned his bridges with the Tea Party faction and the most conservative Republicans because of his support of the bipartisan comprehensive immigration bill that the Senate passed in the last Congress. Then there's Governor Christie of New Jersey, my own state. Governor Christie, you know, obviously has great ambitions. His chairmanship of the Republican Governors Association gave him a remarkably favorable opportunity to get out and around the country to introduce himself. But he's still got this Bridgegate scandal hanging over him. And as of this time, the U.S. Attorney for New Jersey has yet to issue his report on the extent that Governor Christie knew about the lane closures on the George Washington Bridge, which was a tremendously destructive event in terms of his aspirations. I think he believes that's now ancient history, but that could surface very easily. And the other thing is, he has problems with the Republican base, one of which is actually kind of symbolic, and that was that the president embraced, that the governor embraced President Obama during Hurricane Sandy, praised him for his proactive stand to help New Jersey, and for many, many conservative Republicans, that condemned Chris Christie for all time and eternity.
And they won't forget it, you think? Because I think people have very short memories, and I think he's counting on it.
Conservative Republicans have very long memories. That's one of their more endearing characteristics.
that's great. Hey, I love talking to you, Ross. You are certainly the hero for so many of us in terms of your total understanding of what Congress is all about and your years of assiduously studying it all. And thank you so much for being with us. We'll come back again, and I have for a final round with you, and I have a whole host of real short questions I want to ask you, okay?
Thanks, Al. You're most gracious.